Hare Krishna.
After his first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Abhay began to associate more with the Gaudiya Math devotees. They gave him books and told him the history of this spiritual master. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was one of 10 children born to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great Vaishnav teacher in the disciplic line from Sri Chaitanya himself. Before the time of Bhaktivinoda, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya had been obscured by teachers and sects falsely claiming to be followers of Lord Chaitanya, but deviating in various drastic ways from his pure teachings. The good reputation of Vaishnavism had been compromised. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, however, through his prolific writings and through his social position as a high governor officer, reestablished respectability of Vaishnavism. He preached that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya were the highest form of theism and were intended not for a particular sect or religion or nation, but for all people of the world. He prophesied that Lord Chaitanya's teaching would go worldwide, and he yearned for it. Right, so here we have another example of the worldwide. Right? Before we were saying that that element devotional service is that which is beneficial for everyone. So here again, then, we have the worldwide. It's Lord Chaitanya's teachings that are for the whole world. Yes? So this is a quote from... I'm not sure. Probably Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The religion preached by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is universal and not exclusive. The principle of kirtan as the future church of the world invites all classes of men without distinctions of caste or clan to the highest cultivation of the spirit. This church, it appears, will extend all over the world and take the place of all sectarian churches, which exclude outsiders from the precincts of the mosque, church, or temple. Lord Chaitanya did not advent himself to liberate only a few men of India. Rather, his main objective was to emancipate all living entities of all countries throughout the entire universe and preach the eternal religion. Lord Chaitanya says in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, quote, "In every town, country, and village my name will be sung." There is no doubt that this unquestionable order will come to pass. Although there is still no pure society of Vaishnavas to be had, yet Lord Chaitanya's prophetic words will in a few days come true. Yeah, will come true, I am sure. Why not? Nothing is absolutely pure in the beginning. From imperfection, purity will come about. Oh, for that day when the fortunate... Oh, for that fortunate day when the English, French, Russian, German, and American people will take up banners, mridangas, and kartals, and raise kirtan through their streets and town. When will this day come? Yeah, so this is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Right, so he's saying is that there may not be a great society now, or especially his time, then there was basically nothing. But he said in just some days it will happen. Because Lord Chaitanya's mission is, we have to remember, we're dealing with the Supreme Lord here. And so he, having created everything, that means that everything will manifest as he desires. It's just a matter of time. Right, so if we take part, we get to take part in this process, and we get the full benefit. We don't take part, then we miss out. It's that simple, like that. But it's just a matter of time, right? Because otherwise, what has been pulling all these different places together and this and that? Right? So Krishna consciousness, you can pull anyone from anywhere, and it all works. Right, so it's the most universal of all situations. Can you hear in the back? Yeah. As a prominent magistrate, what's a magistrate? What do you think? Yeah, dear. Magistrate.
Official in the court.
Official in the court, yes. See, because the court official must be very straight, right? You know, he can't be crooked or anything, so therefore he's a magistrate, right? Yeah, straight. Sit straight. Is straight, right? So everything's straight.
As you estimated, he's basically taking care of a certain district.
Yes, he's a district magistrate. So that's what it is. The magistrate means you have a district, like a state is divided into districts, and then one whole district, he is actually the head of the judicial and the police. So he sees the law and order and justice in that district. So that's a district magistrate. So it's a very prestigious position. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because by this time then Vaishnavism was basically seen to be a bunch of beggars. You know, they would try to be like the Goswamis and all that, but no one was very impressed by their character or intellectual understanding of the philosophy or anything like that. So then people were just leaving it. So then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur then comes and reestablishes the actual point. You understand the difference here? In the West, you have Christianity, right? So it was functioning in its form nearest to how it was established. Then with time, it becomes somehow or another deviated from that. The philosophy is not known, the character is not seen to be very pure and everything, right? Then you have people that come along and reform. So when they reform, they basically end up throwing out the whole thing, starting something new, right? So it looks like it's progressing. But the problem is that they're getting farther and farther from the original position. Does that make sense? In trying to solve one problem, they create another. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's gone away from the teachings, so he doesn't throw out the concepts that they're following. Right, the kirtan remains, the japa remains, tilak remains, proper dress remains, the Vedic literatures remain, everything remains, right? And you just reestablish it. Does that make sense? You had Judaism, then the people become Christian. That means Jesus was Jewish, he wasn't Christian. You got to get that one very straight, right? So he was a Jewish priest. And he was trying to get people to understand devotional service is the most important thing within religion, not ritual. Right? So he's trying to re-inspire that devotional sentiment to the Supreme Lord. Right? But it wasn't necessarily very appreciated. Those who are very ritualistic don't appreciate spontaneity. So he didn't, you know, end up, you know, doing so well. So then, that having been accomplished, then his followers, instead, in the beginning, his original followers, they remained Jewish and followed all the Jewish holidays. And, just were trying to follow his teachings and understanding Judaism. But with time, then they created a new religion. New ritual, new everything. It had nothing to do with Judaism. Does that make sense? So then, instead of the New Testament being like further understandings and commentaries on the Old Testament, which was the, how you say, the book of the Jews, then it just became its own new thing, right? And then again later, when people didn't appreciate how it was going, then again they create new. You know what I'm saying? So all the art and music and, you know, dress and refinement that was there in the Catholic Church, then the Protestants threw out. You know what I'm saying? Is that what he says? So you understand the difference in the method? The method is you go back to the original. You're on a path, you go off, you get back onto the path. You don't start off in a new direction now. Does that make sense? Yes? So it's a matter of understanding, so that people understand properly. That's what's important. Does that make sense? Yeah? So, then because people were off, and because people were starting to become very enamored by the whole British scene and the prestige connected with all the social positions, there Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took the position of a magistrate. So that basically is as high as you could get in the system, you know, that's official, that an Indian could hold. You know, generally positions higher than that were all held by the British. So then this is very prestigious. So you're working within the British system. Not only that, you're better at the British system than anyone in the whole system. Of all the magistrates in India, right? You have, what, 29 states or something? Or I think now they got a few more. I think 31. Now it's 29. Before it was 27. Okay, so then 27 states are there. Well, this has been before. I'm not exactly sure how it was broken up, because there would have been kingdoms. But then all those kingdoms had districts. So you have a lot of districts. A lot of districts. There were over 900 kings at that time. Right? So you can imagine how many district magistrates there were. So he was the best in India. So like that, he established that. So if somebody of that qualification, that intelligence, then he's writing books and... is this some... Thank you. he's writing books. And then, and speaking and that, moving with all the top intellectuals and social people in India. And so he makes a change. And he reestablishes that Vaishnavism is, you know, a bona fide cultural thing that a, you know, educated, intelligent gentleman would want to be part of. Right? Yes? No? Right now. So then you could bring it out as then a very dynamic preaching machine with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then you take that and make it so that the Westerners can relate to it. Right? And so then that is the ISKCON mission. So now it's been geared for the whole world. Does that make sense? So that's what it means. In a few days, it goes from nothing into it's an international society. It was always an international society, but now it's more obvious. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Why not? As a prominent magistrate, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a responsible government officer. He served also as superintendent of the temple of Lord Jagannath and was the father of 10 children. Yet, in spite of these responsibilities, he served the cause of Krishna with prodigious energy. Right? Because then on all these levels, this could say, okay, you're Vaishnava and all that, but you know, we're modern and we're moving forward and all that, therefore he's a magistrate. So he's more forward than anybody. Right? They could say, okay, you have time for all this devotional activities because... you know, you just sit and chant Hare Krishna. No, he had a family with 10 children. Right? So he's got a family with 10 children. He's a district magistrate. On top of that, he writes books and gives lectures. Right? So no one can say, oh, he can do that, you know, but we are more busy. No, you can't get busier than this. Right? What do you think? And you know the very amazing thing? He's district magistrate. He comes home at night, takes a little something to eat, goes to sleep at 8 o'clock, gets up at 12, midnight, right? Then he does writing until about, I think, I'm not sure when it was, 4 o'clock or something. Then he chants, he takes his bath, everything like that, has his breakfast, and then goes to the court, right? Meets people like that. And despite his busy schedule, that when he would either give lecture or when he would sit and hear discussions on Bhagavad Katha, he would actually stay awake. Amazing, no? Yet in spite of these responsibilities, he served the cause of Krishna with prodigious energy. After coming home from his office in the evening, taking his meals and going to bed, he would sleep from 8 until midnight and then get up and write until morning. He wrote more than 100 books during his life, many of them in English. One of his important contributions with the cooperation of Jagannath Das Babaji and Gaurikishore Das Babaji was to locate the exact birthplace of Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur, about 60 miles north of Calcutta. 60 miles means 90 kilometers. So that must mean in a straight line, no? Crow flies 90 miles, yeah, because the road is 135. Okay. While working to reform Gaudiya Vaishnavism in India, he prayed to Lord Chaitanya, "Your teachings have been much deprecated. It is not in my power to restore them." And he prayed for a son to help him in his preaching. Then on February 6, 1874, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was born to Bhaktivinod Thakur in Jagannath Puri. The Vaishnavs considered him the answer to his father's prayer. He was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and draped across his chest like the sacred thread worn by brahmanas. His parents gave him the name Bimala Prasad. When Bimala Prasad was 6 months old, the carts of Jagannath festival stopped at the gate of Bhaktivinoda's residence and for 3 days could not be moved. Right, so the idea is that the family is there, but that the idea is that it will be progressive in God consciousness, right? So by being progressive means the parents are Krishna conscious, the children will be raised in Krishna consciousness, right? That's the most important element. Because otherwise, cats and dogs are having children, no? So that's not a problem. Children are being had. But now, the point is, do you want your children to take birth again? That's the point. So now, if you don't, then they have to be Krishna conscious. So therefore, this is the prayer. This is the consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife brought the infant onto the cart and approached the deity of Lord Jagannath. Spontaneously, the infant extended his arms and touched the feet of Lord Jagannath, and was immediately blessed with a garland that fell from the body of the Lord. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur learned that the Lord's garland had fallen onto his son, he realized that this was the son for whom he had prayed, right? So his mother goes to offer obeisances before Jagannath, and the baby just sticks his hands out, touches Lord Jagannath. And then Lord Jagannath's garland just immediately falls off onto the baby. Right? Like that. Not bad. Right? What do you think? What do you think? Good? Very good. Actually, that's pretty good. I think that's the first words he said. Very good. Keep it up. Keep up the good work. One day when Bimala Prasad was still a child of no more than 4 years, his father mildly rebuked him for eating a mango not yet duly offered to Lord Krishna. Bimala Prasad, although only a child, considered himself an offender to the Lord and vowed never to eat mangoes again. This was a vow that he would follow throughout his life. So whenever they would come and offer him mangoes, then he wouldn't eat them. He would always say, "I am an offender." Like that. He never ate mangoes. By the time Bimala Prasad was 7 years old, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita and could even explain the verses. And that's at seven. Not bad. I was told that from four he was actually chanting 64 rounds, but I haven't heard that in the general description, but I've heard some of the Gaudiya Math say that. Not bad. Yeah, very serious. His father then began training him in proofreading and printing in conjunction with the publishing of the Vaishnav magazine, Sajjana Toshani. With his father, he visited many holy places and heard discourses with the learned pundits. Right? So at seven, his father started training him in proofreading and printing, right? Because he already knew the whole Gita and can explain the verses, right? So now it's time to start writing. Right? As a student, Bimala Prasad preferred to read the books written by his father instead of the school texts. By the time he was 25, he had become well-versed in Sanskrit, mathematics, and astronomy. And he had established himself as the author and publisher of many magazine articles and one book, Surya Siddhanta, for which he received the epithet Siddhanta Saraswati in recognition of his erudition. When he was 26, his father guided him to take initiation from a renounced Vaishnav saint, Gaurikishore Das Babaji, who advised him, quote, to preach the absolute truth and keep aside all other works. Receiving the blessings of Gaurikishore Das Babaji, Bimala Prasad, now Siddhanta Saraswati, resolved to dedicate his body, mind, and words to the service of Lord Krishna. Yeah, so then he studied and became, you know, very, very expert in these subjects, right? So did you notice anything that he is expert at that you don't have the opportunity to learn? Anyone notice? No. So that's the idea, is that this education is the education that we see that the acharyas learned, that Krishna learned. We actually take our curriculum directly from what Krishna learned. Like that. How he was trained in the Gurukul, that's the program we use. Does that make sense? So it's not a bad program. Many have gone through it before. Just they may go through it a little quicker. Like Krishna learned the 64 arts, so he learned one a day, right? So he was expert at them. He started learning in the morning, by evening he was expert, right? So maybe they learn a little quicker. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by seven knew the whole Bhagavad Gita. We may take a little longer, like that. Does that make sense? So, like that. I was also told is that later on, when he saw the importance of preaching in English, he learned English in 3 months by reading a dictionary. Right? He read a dictionary, memorized the dictionary, and then, you know, put the words together. And so that's why his writings or his speaking in English, you actually need a dictionary if you're going to read it, you know, like that. One page. Like in the Brahma Samhita, one page you have to look up at least 5 words. Like that. So, you know, like that. So it can be done. So that means it is possible in 8 years to learn some English, right? Like that. He did it in 3, so. 3 months. 3 months, excuse me, yes, 3 months. In 1905, Siddhanta Saraswati took a vow to chant the Hare Krishna mantra 1 billion times. That's 1,000,000,000. So that means it's 100 crores. Right? A crore is 100 lakhs. Right? So 100,000 times 100 times 100. Right? That's a long time. So he must have been doing a lot of rounds, right? Because that's 10,000. That means if you're doing a lakh, that would be 10,000 days to do, right? Means you have a lakh, which is 100,000. Okay, so that's 1 day times 100 is 100, and then that times 100 is 10,000, right? So that means 10,000 days of chanting 1 lakh. So you have 365 in a year. So then that would be 3 years. It would take 30 years. Right? If you did 1 lakh a day, but I think he did 3 lakhs a day. So in 10 years, it took him 10 years to do this. Residing in Mayapur in a grass hut near the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, he chanted the Hare Krishna mantra day and night. He cooked rice once a day in an earthen pot and ate nothing more. He slept on the ground, and when the rainwater leaked through the grass ceiling, he sat beneath an umbrella chanting. If you go out of, you know, when you go past Yogpeet, right, then there's the post office, right? Then there's a road going off to the left. Right? No, left. Yeah? So if you go down that road, you know, going that way, towards the west, then there's one point where you turn right. You know, when you're going on the Parikram? Over there, I think, is Jayadev Goswami's, where he would either live or did bhajan or like that. Yes? No? But if you, instead of turning right, you turned left and went into the bushes out there, that's where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was sitting and chanting. Somehow or another, I don't know why, nobody seems to know that it's there, but the spot is there. In 1911, while his aging father was lying ill, Siddhanta Saraswati took up a challenge against pseudo-Vaishnavas who claimed that birth and their caste was the prerequisite for preaching Krishna consciousness. The caste-conscious Brahmin community had become incensed by Bhaktivinod Thakur's presentation of many scriptural proofs that anyone, regardless of birth, could become a Brahmin or Vaishnava. These smart Brahmanas, out to prove the inferiority of the Vaishnavas, arranged a discussion. On behalf of his deposed father, young Siddhanta Saraswati, wrote an essay, The Conclusive Difference Between the Brahmana and the Vaishnava, and submitted it before his father. Despite his poor health, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was elated to hear the arguments that would soundly defeat the challenge of the Smartas. That's the book that we know of now, Brahmana and Vaishnava. It's quite a big book. So he said an essay. It's like this fat. That's an essay. Right? Siddhanta Saraswati then traveled to Midnapur, where pundits from all over India had gathered for a 3-day discussion. Some of the smarta Brahmin pundits who spoke first claimed that anyone born in a Shudra family, even though initiated by a spiritual master, could never become purified and perform the brahminical duties of worshipping the deity or initiating disciples. Finally, Siddhanta Saraswati delivered his speech. He began quoting Vedic references glorifying the Brahmanas, and at this, the smartest scholars became very much pleased. But when he became discussing the actual qualifications for becoming a Brahmana, the qualities of the Vaishnavas, the relationship between the two, and who, according to the Vedic literature, was qualified to become a spiritual master and initiate disciples, then the joy of the Vaishnav haters disappeared. Siddhanta Saraswati conclusively proved from the scriptures that if one is born as a Shudra but exhibits the qualities of Brahman, then he should be honored as a Brahmana despite his birth. And if one is born in a Brahman family but acts like a Shudra, then he is not a Brahmana. After his speech, Siddhanta Saraswati was congratulated by the president of the conference, and thousands thronged around him. It was a victory for Vaishnavism. So he started up as Brahman and Vaishnava. So it's not that there's a problem with Brahmanas. The problem is that if you think that the position of Brahmana is fixed by birth, right, means that's a consideration that, okay, how do you identify a species of life, right? It's by birth. The animal's born a dog, you call it a dog, you know, no matter how it acts, right? But the point is that the human being has the option to be any consciousness, right? So it's not they're born human, they're automatically human. They have to act human, right? And so in acting human, then they have to, you know, do certain things, and that is taking up the devotional service. That's what makes them human. Right, following the Vedic culture, then you could say, in one way, is human. But following it according to Vaishnavism, that's progressively human. Right? That actually means you're going to solve actually the problem. So smartas means that they're very attached to the rules. They have understood that by following all the rules and regulations, they will be happy. They're following a process given by Jaimini, and so they're very much established in the rules, because the rules, unless you do them perfectly, then you don't get your result. Now the problem comes that the natural tendency towards cleanliness, towards piety, towards all those things, generally is not seen in a Shudra, right? That's why they're Shudras, because they're not inclined towards proper action, right? So then they take it that it's this inherent nature that you're dealing with. But therefore, on the material platform, generally you see a Shudra would not be interested to follow the rules and regulations to the platform of purity that's required in the Vedic sacrifices. Does that make sense? Because cleanliness is very important. Purity is very important. The, you know, ability to perform the ritual with focus and very nicely, not just getting it done, not doing it for prestige, not doing it to, you know, show off, right? So those will be natural tendencies of the Shudra. Does that make sense? Therefore, then, it's not, they will never be able to do it right, that they'd actually be able to get the good results of the karmakandic activities. Yes? So, therefore, they're looking at it from that perspective because they're walking by nature. Someone's born there because of the nature. Now, what they miss is that the nature of the soul is different from all that. The nature of the soul is to serve Krishna. Right? That's what souls do, right? They serve Krishna. And then that position, then it's natural that anyone from any position, if they actually take it up with determination, then they can be part of that whole process. Does that make sense? Yes? No? What do you think? Yes? Right? But they can't understand that because they're working on the bodily platform. What family you're born into, that's it. They're not actually looking at the platform of the soul. Even though within their religion they have to deal with the soul, because otherwise if the soul's not eternal, how do you come back to get the good results of your pious activities? But they don't see the soul actually in relationship to the Lord. They see it in relationship to enjoying the material energy. That's the problem. Therefore, they get stuck. So the Brahmanas are glorious because they are following the Vedic culture with all proper attitude. But higher than that is Vaishnavism. So as a Vaishnav, one therefore can be a Brahman. By one's own conditioned nature, no. But as a devotee, one can be a Brahman. So the more one is situated in devotional service, then the more one will be situated in Brahminical culture. That's why the thrust of Daiva Varnashram is Brahminical culture. Yes?
What's the difference between Vaishnava?
The Vaishnava and Brahman. It's a matter of stages, actually. They're actually the same thing. But it's just a matter of realization. In other words, takes up the process, right, the Vedic process at Upanayanam, like that, then he becomes established as, you know, a member of the Vedic community. So he is Vatu. He has the adhikar, the qualifications to become, Brahminical, but he doesn't have the knowledge or practice, right? So he studies, he learns. Then when that is established, he's good at that, then he becomes, you know, classified as a proper Brahmin, right? Because he can perform the Brahminical activities. Then from performing those Brahminical activities, and with that knowledge and the philosophy, then he should understand that these activities are meant to please the Supreme Lord. Right? So then pleasing the Supreme Lord, then that being the actual purpose of his performing Brahminical activities, then he becomes a devotee. Right? Then within devotee you have the neophyte, the madhyama, and the uttama. Right? So like that. So you have common people. Then from that you have those who actually take up human life by following the Vedic culture. Within that, those who are then initiated into the Upanayana, they become Brahmins, who then learn and then become established as Brahmins, right? From Vatus to Brahmins. Then from there, they take up Vaishnavism. Okay? So, but because that is a natural process, that's a mechanical process. But because the soul is naturally, so we can see is that being a Brahmin actually means ultimately being a devotee. So therefore, anybody can take up devotional service. So automatically they become human and they become a Brahmin. Right? They may or may not know the technicalities of Brahminical life and culture. Right? But they know the essence, which is devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it means any devotee then technically is as good as or better than a Brahmin. Right? Yes? No? Some other questions? Yes? No? Just... Any questions? Understand? So when you ask for questions, don't do that one. You know, you want to clean your ear or something, do that one. Okay? Right? So first he glorified Brahmins, how they're the best and the topmost in society, and that's perfection of human life, this, that, blah. But then he showed how perfection of Brahminical life is Vaishnavism, quoting from the scriptures, and how anybody who takes up Vaishnavism is already a perfect human being, right? Is already a perfect Brahmin. Therefore, anybody can do it. So then they were defeated. But first he established in this order. So then there was a common ground. The Brahmins were very happy. With the passing away of his father in 1914 and his spiritual master in 1915, Siddhanta Saraswati continued the mission of Lord Chaitanya. He assumed editorship of Sajjana Toshini and established the Bhagavat Press in Krishnanagar. Then in 1918 in Mayapur, he sat down before a picture of Gaurakishordas Babaji and initiated himself into the sannyas order. At this time, he assumed the sannyas title, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was dedicated to using the printing press as the best medium for large-scale distribution of Krishna consciousness. He thought of the printing press as a Brihad Madanga. Right? What's a Brihad Madanga? Yes. Big Madanga means Madanga. I see. And so what is the advantage of this big mridanga means mridanga over the small mridanga? Big mridanga, you can play very loud kirtan. And why do you want a very loud kirtan? The living entities will get more benefit from chanting Hare Krishna. Why would they get more benefit from a bigger mridanga means mridanga.
Bigger mridanga, more fun in the kirtan.
More what?
More fun in the kirtan.
More fun in the kirtan. So that's why the little kids have more fun than the bigger kids with bigger ones with the little mridangas, because for them then it's a bigger mridanga. You know, they like that?
Yeah, usually they love
me. So it's a matter of how fun it is. So then we should get bigger kartals, you know? I've heard it, maybe we could try ash can lids, right? Oh, they're really good. They even have a good handle on them, you know? So anyone? Like that, instead of accordions, we should take out grand pianos, right? They're much bigger and all that. You know, they got wheels on the bottom. We could change and put on like rubber tires and push it down the street. But, yeah? Traditional Vaishnava musical instruments. Like Brihad Mridanga means Mridangas. Very nice. Okay, well, you have something to add to this. You know, he says it's more fun. That's why it's more beneficial. Yes, Brihad Mridanga is very big, so therefore it makes more sound, it goes farther, right? That's the point, is the small mridanga is kirtan, so somewhat within the hearing range, but the Brihad Mridanga can be heard all over the world. Does that make sense? So it also might be more fun to go out with a big, you know, 10-foot tall mridanga or something. But, you know, devotees can play one at this end, one at that end. You know. We could probably put actually quite a few at each end. That's what makes it more fun. Then if you put it on a trampoline. You don't understand the trampoline. The point is otherwise it's clay. If it falls on the ground, it'll break, right? You know, and it's big, that big, all the straps, it may be a very big explosion. So if the trampoline, then it'll bounce. You could also probably just stick it in a large lump of silly putty or something. Yes? How did he give himself sannyas? He had a picture of his spiritual master. What, you have some plans or something that you're not telling us about? See, is that at the time there were no Gaudiya Vaishnav sannyasis, you know, Tridandi sannyasis. So he made the arrangement himself, like that. But the point is he's liberated, therefore he is working with the spiritual master and those kind of persons, you know what I'm saying? We're here, so for us it's just a picture, but for them it's not just a picture. You know what I'm saying? You know. Does that make sense? So that's what we'll see, yes. How did he know the mantra? How did he know the mantra for sannyas? Because the mantra and all that is handed down. See, the sannyas ceremony for someone taking Babaji sannyas, which there were tons of, you know, which Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, his father, you know, was like this. That's common. So the ceremony is the same. The only difference is that the cloth is saffron, you add a danda into it. The danda, the kamandalu. Like that. But otherwise, that cloth is there, the kopan is there, the mantra is there, the dasa samskar, that's all the same, right? It means initiation means there's pancha samskar, there's five samskars, right? You have the neck beads that establish that the material world is a place of misery, right? You have the tilak, urdhva pundra, that the path, therefore, is upward out of the material world to the supreme, right? One accepts the name as a servant of the Lord, right? One establishes oneself as a servant. One receives mantras by which to worship the deity, and one accepts the worship of the deity. So those five are the pancharatrik, panchasamskar. So sannyas means those are there, plus another five. Does that make sense? They shave the head, then achuta gotra, they identify themselves not belonging to any social position in this world, like that. They, the kopan shuddhi, the mantra, like that. Four, what's the fifth? Oh yeah, taking a bath, ceremonial bath, like that. Okay, so those 10 are the sannyas things. So those were standard, they were established by Gopal Bhatta Goswami in his Samskar Deepika, right? So then following that and all, then he would have everything with him. Okay, but it's not something we do. We can't say, well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did it. Okay, yes, but he had the Bhagavad Gita, you know, memorized at 7. He was chanting 64 rounds. By that, then for 10 years, he was chanting 3 lakhs of names, you know, living out in the forest, you know, different things like that. He is a ray of Vishnu. You know, he came down from the spiritual world. So one has to kind of understand what maybe one couldn't do that. Does that make sense? So we shouldn't catch you, you know, in the back somewhere taking sannyas from a picture. Okay? Okay? Yes? Is it harder for someone not born in a devotee family to practice devotional service than one born in a family of devotees to practice devotional service? Technically speaking, you would say no, because the soul is a soul. So the nature is the same, that would be there. But generally speaking, then those born in devotee families right from the beginning, their, you know, beginning of their life is then within Krishna consciousness. So the whole Krishna conscious culture and practices are their natural lifestyle and all that. While someone not born in Krishna consciousness, the tendency will be they'll have already developed a different lifestyle, right? Then they'll come to practicing this lifestyle. So it's just the since that's the only thing you've ever done, therefore the practice is much more natural. It doesn't mean that it can't be accomplished by anybody, it's more natural. Also, those born in families of devotees, then they themselves have done devotional service in the previous life. So depending upon the seriousness of it and the seriousness of when they take it up, you can understand how serious they were in the previous life. Right? So if they're not very serious, it means last life they were doing some devotional service but weren't very serious about it. If they are, then you can understand like that. So that's an advantage. But otherwise, technically, it doesn't really matter.
Does that mean that if you do a little devotional service, just the previous life, and you become human in your next life?
I didn't catch the first part of the question. Yes, means those who have done devotional service, they'll always be born, yeah, as a human being in a devotee family, you know, unless you have some alternative of who would be born in a devotee. I mean, of course, if you're Prajapati, then, you know, you can end up with some wild, so because all the species are born to the Prajapati, so, you know, one of the Prajapatis, you know, has, you know, all the chickens and, you know, aardvarks and platypuses for kids, you know, stuff like that, you know. Like that. I guess when they're small, they're cute, so you don't have to worry, right? But here we go. But now, So that'll always be human and in a devotee family. If someone has performed devotional activities unknowingly, you know what I'm saying? He'll be born in a devotee family. Even these animals, you put out some prasad, they eat it, they'll be born in a devotee family because they've done devotional service, though they don't know it's devotional service. They don't know it's prasad. But they have performed the service. So they'll get human birth, right? Like that. And generally something, you know, better nice. If someone has just taken up devotional service that's not very serious, then they may be born not specifically in a devotee family, but a very religious or very pious family. You know, wealthy, well-to-do, nicely situated, like that kind of a thing. But if they were serious about devotional service, then they're born in devotee families. That's why devotee kids are supposed to be serious about Krishna consciousness. Right? Because otherwise, you've already done all these other things, so to take it back up again this life, you know, material activity, just really regular mundane stuff, it's kind of a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay, you had something? Why aren't girls allowed to be sannyasis? Why? You like the shaved head? Okay, you like just wearing the same exact cloth every day, day in, day out, no change, nothing. That's why girls don't take sannyas. You understand? Because for them, being in an environment where there's nice facilities and all that, and one's comfortable, then the girl is more secure and therefore more God-conscious. Right? When it becomes more austere and that there's no facilities, then the tendency is to become more insecure. And then in that insecurity, then harder to think of the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So they may become very detached. But they'll just become reclusive. They don't get socially involved. They're not involved in economics and money or, you know, trying to look, make themselves look beautiful, this, that. But nice, you know, proper facility, clean, regular, things like that, things they can depend upon, you know, proper things to eat. You know what's going to happen then there. But the sannyas, you don't actually know what's going to happen. Because technically you don't have a place. You don't have a set anything. You know what I'm saying? So moving from place to place, what facility you have, what's there and that, it's always changing and all that. So that's very difficult for... You know what I'm saying? It's just not... In other words, Krishna has created it. But what position will be the best for every living entity to become God-conscious? That's how it's created. Like when you're young, you study. Right? When you're older, then, you know, family life is there and all that. When you're older than that, then there's, you know, detachment and renunciation. Right? All these things are there. So then what the boys do, they have what's good for them. What the girls do is good for them. Right? The girls have a vacation. They come back fresh and very enthusiastic. Boys come back, have a vacation, they come back stupid. And however long the vacation is, that's how long it takes before they become normal again. So they go out on a 5-month vacation. For 5 months, they're an idiot. I mean, an absolute idiot. Lazy, don't want to do anything, see no interest in doing anything, because for 5 months, their mommy did everything for them, and they think that's perfection. Right? Sit and you can do nothing, get something nice to eat and run around like an idiot. So they come back thinking that that's actually a good position. Right? Well, girls, they go have a vacation, they're always busy, always active, always working in relationships. But boys, if they go on vacation, they stop working in relationships, stop being sensitive in that, and what they do is then they start thinking that they're supposed to be served, because that's what their mom does. You understand? So that's why we see is like in the boys' school, there is no vacation. In the girls' school, there is. You understand? Because it just works for each. So each has their advantage and disadvantage. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, like the boys, they come earlier, go or later. Right? They go 7 days a week. They don't have the breaks in between. Because those breaks don't do good for them. But it does do for the girls. Does that make sense? Like that. So the girl needs variety, the boy needs it to be fixed. Does that make sense? At the same time, the boy can function in an environment that's not so secure, while the girl has to be in an environment that's very secure. You know what I'm saying? So you have all these things that are opposite and everything. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Otherwise, you're not going to be sneaking off with her and taking sannyas, right? No, okay, very good. Yes? No? Very good. 2 out of 3. He regressed. No, he didn't even say a hari bol. That was last time. First time he actually spoke 2 words. Then last time he nodded his head, and this time he just stared.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.